Welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, I'm Janelle Eckerman, and today I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph for Friday, December 12, 2025. And from the front page, the main headline is Abe Scores with Young Readers. Bison Mascot Visits Prairieland for Stick to Reading Program, and it's written by D. Jack Alkire. Normal. Lunchtime in a grade school cafeteria carries a certain buzz, a hum of energy, as young students trade snacks as well as jokes. But when you add a visit from a celebrity like, say, Abe, the mascot for the Bloomington Bison, the energy level goes skyward, and that is exactly what happened on Wednesday when the 7-foot-tall, top-hat-clad Bison snuck his way into lunchtime at Prairieland Elementary. Anytime you bring in, you know, any type of mascot, anything like that, the kids obviously go bonkers, said Principal Scott Peters. They love it. Abe's visit was a final reward for students participating in the Bison Stick to Reading program that incentivizes young people to read more. The entire lunch period on Wednesday became an ocean of excitement, rising and falling in volume with each of Abe's silly dance moves. The midday celebration could have made the second half of a school day difficult for instructors, but Peters said Prairieland students and staff are good at getting back on schedule. We have our fun and then we talk about, okay, now we're good, we've got to go back and it's back to business, he said. It's a fun story for them to tell when they get home or get back to their teachers. But the kids actually are, they're pretty good, so they'll adjust. Prairieland was the 5th school to receive a visit from Abe during the fall session of Stick to Reading, said Maddie Keefe, Director of Community Relations and Partnership Fulfillment for the team. Abe also visited Cedar Ridge Elementary, St. Mary's Catholic School, North Point Elementary and Towanda Elementary, she said. And then the article is then continued onto page A2. It's a meaningful impact, Keefe said. I feel like reading is kind of lost nowadays in the digital age, so to be able to play a part in wanting to get kids to read again was really cool. The Bison introduced Stick to Reading this year in partnership with Premium Loaves, which owns and operates almost 100 Jimmy John's franchises in the Midwest and beyond, said Andy Zilch, the Bison's president. More than 8,000 students in kindergarten through 6th grade in the Bloomington Normal area and beyond received special bookmarks for the program, he said. On the bookmark, there were 8 circles for 8 books that you would complete reading, Zilch said. So the teacher would check off that circle once you got that book completed. And once your bookmark was filled out, you had the opportunity to get a Little John Jimmy John sandwich and a free ticket to a Bloomington Bison hockey game. The game for the fall session of Stick to Reading was on Friday, November 28. Students who participate in the spring session, which begins February 1, will receive a ticket to the April 3 home game against the Indy Fuel, Keefe said. Schools and educators interested in participating should contact David Casey at dcasey@bloomingtonbisonhockey.com. Zilch came up with the idea, but he credits Casey and Mark Largent, CEO of Premium Loaves, for making the program work. When I first spoke with Largent about this, it was a 3-second conversation, Zilch said. I explained it. He said, I'm on board. My wife's a teacher. What needs to be done for me to be part of this? Like it was so simple. And here's the other thing too. It was very difficult to execute. You're reaching out to all these schools around the area. Dave Casey, our director of ticketing, deserves a huge props for helping move this along. Professional sports organizations have a unique opportunity to impact the lives of young fans, Zilch said. It ignites enthusiasm, and if we can ignite something that's as important as reading through hockey, through us, even better, he said. Because as a community standpoint, if we're doing this and we're helping enhance the community, then it checks all the boxes, you know. This is exactly what our philanthropic needs have to be. While the legwork creating Stick to Reading may have been difficult, getting kids to take part was fairly simple, Peters said. Students picked books based on their grade level from home, school libraries or their classrooms, and around three-quarters of the 435 students at Prairieland completed the reading challenge, he said. They did it in a pretty short amount of time, you know, and it worked for all ages, Peters said. We just made sure that we adjusted it so that the kids knew this is what it means at your reading level. We just kind of put it into their hands. The teachers promoted it and away we went. And with this article, there are two photos, and the main photo from the front page is captioned, Abe the Bison high fives fourth grader Xavier Dulk on Wednesday at Prairieland Elementary School. Abe's visit was a reward for more than 300 Prairieland students who completed the Bloomington Bison Stick to Reading program in partnership with Jimmy John's. And that photograph was courtesy of Clay Jackson from the Pantograph. And the second photo is on page A2, and the caption reads, Abe the Bison hugs fourth grader Isla Hembra in the cafeteria on Wednesday at Prairieland Elementary School. And that photo was courtesy of Clay Jackson from the Pantograph. And from the front page, the next article is, Economy sags but tech lifts stocks. AI boom counters job, housing and inflation pain, and it's written by Emma Nelson from the Minnesota Star Tribune. From jobs to housing to grocery prices, the US economy has been weakening for months, but the stock market is telling a different story thanks to a handful of companies called the Magnificent Seven. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Meta, Nvidia and Tesla. These tech giants, which deal in everything from e-commerce to software to chip manufacturing, make up a disproportionate share of the market and have pushed it to record highs in the AI boom. Without spending by the Mag 7 and other tech companies, the US economy would have barely grown in the first half of the year, Oxford Economics lead economist Adam Slater wrote in an October 3 research briefing. In other words, tech is helping keep the economy afloat. But if these companies' fortunes change, the downstream impact could be severe. Though economists aren't forecasting an AI crash, they have acknowledged similarities between the AI boom and previous bubbles from the dot-com bust of the early 2000s. And this article is continued onto page A2. To the ultimately catastrophic bull market of the 1920s. The fear is if trillions of dollars in projected spending on AI infrastructure fail to generate revenue, there is potential for a downturn with global ramifications. The Mag 7 for years have exceeded the rest of the S&P 500, the index that tracks the stock performance of the leading 500 public companies. The gap started widening after OpenAI released ChatGPT in 2022, launching the AI boom. The impact of the Mag 7 on the markets is clear when those companies are out of the picture. Between January 2020 and November 14 of this year, the S&P 500 outperformed the S&P 493, the index minus the Mag 7, by a median annual return of nearly 8 percentage points, according to analysis from Piper Sandler Technical Research. The bull market has been good news for high-income Americans who tend to hold more stocks than the average consumer and so benefit more from rising stock prices. Those high earners also tend to keep spending when economic headwinds cause lower-income consumers to pull back. Higher income earners are driving about half of US consumer spending, said Anthony Saglimbene, Vice President and Chief Market Strategist at Ameriprise Financial. With the market up right now, one of the things that we've been talking about is markets and the economy stand on pretty narrow pillars, or at least they have so far this year, he said. The University of Michigan surveys of consumers reported in October the economic sentiment of stockholders, especially those with the biggest portfolios, has improved since May. Sentiment of non-stockholders has declined in that time, landing where it was in 2022 when post-pandemic inflation peaked at 9.1%. Overall, consumer sentiment has fallen this year in the face of rising prices, a frozen job market, and anxiety over a possible recession. But how high-income consumers feel about the economy may help buoy consumption spending even amid views of the economy that are relatively subdued from a historical perspective, according to the survey. The Federal Reserve's November Beige Book, which outlines economic conditions across the central bank's 12 districts, reported an overall decline in consumer spending, while higher-end retail spending remained resilient. In the 9th district, which the Minneapolis Fed oversees, employment declined and prices rose. The Mag 7 account for more than a third of the value of the S&P 500. Nvidia, which last year skyrocketed to the number one spot as the go-to chipmaker for powering AI data centers, makes up about 8% of the index. For comparison, the companies in that top spot at the end of 1990, IBM, 2000, GE, and 2010, ExxonMobil, comprised about 3% to 4% of the S&P, according to research from Ameriprise. Among Minnesota companies, United Health Group ranks highest on the S&P, hovering around number 30. With a $300 billion market cap, it makes up about 0.5% of the index. The weight toward the Mag 7 and other tech stocks means the fortunes of the average 401k or pension holder are tied disproportionately to the fate of a handful of companies in a single industry. You have a market that is going to be very dependent upon the performance of those particular names, said Craig Johnson, Managing Director and Chief Market Technician at Piper Sandler. Consider the week of November 17, when investor anxiety about tech spending on CapEx, capital expenditures, such as data centers, led to a sell-off that produced a 1.9% drop in the S&P and a 2.7% drop in the more tech-heavy NASDAQ composite. Nvidia's banner third quarter earnings report allayed fears, and the markets ended the week on a positive note. CEO Jensen Huang, during the company's November 19 earnings call, addressed investor concern head on. "There has been a lot of talk about an AI bubble," he said. "From our vantage point, we see something very different. The AI gold rush has prompted comparisons to the dot-com bubble, when CapEx spending on early internet infrastructure outstripped demand." Of respondents to Bank of America's November Global Fund Manager Survey, 45% said the biggest tail risk to the economy and the markets is the AI bubble. Though the two moments rhyme, there are key differences. The Mag 7 includes established players like Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon that have survived previous tech bubbles. And so far, companies have been relying more on revenue for CapEx spending than debt, even though the massive debt deals like Meta's $27 billion to build a Louisiana data center have made recent headlines. The starting point is that these companies don't really have any debt. Their balance sheets are very healthy, said Daniel Grosvenor, Director of Equity Strategy at Oxford Economics. "It's a risk that's worth monitoring, but our view is that it's not an immediate risk." And continuing on in today's reading of the Panagraph, I'll read from page A2 today's flicked fact. Question: can you name the well-known former Central Illinoisan who, back at a high school assembly, tried to perform a magic trick with eggs, but while on stage accidentally broke the eggs before the trick? This resulted in a hilarious roar from the student body, a moment he says taught him that failure can sometimes be far more entertaining than succeeding? And the answer is, it was actor Dick Van Dyke back at an assembly in 1943 at Danville High. Years later, as he told in his 2025 book, 100 Rules for Living to 100, the broken egg failure that led to laughter spawned him to trip over an ottoman in the intro of The Dick Van Dyke Show because it gathered more laughs. Mr. Van Dyke turns 100 on Saturday. And in How Time Flies, 100 years ago today on December 12, 1925, considerable talk and interest in the condition of the normal public schools have been aroused recently as a result of the overcrowded conditions. Inadequate health and sanitation, especially for the small children, and lack of equipment, laboratories, toilets, drinking fountains for the larger ones. And 75 years ago today, on December 12, 1950, lights will go on in Bloomington Normal on Thursday night to open a McLean County campaign to raise $200,000 for new buildings at the Baby Fold, Superintendent William A. Hammett said. All residents who wish to contribute are asked to turn on porch lights or leave a light in a window. A solicitor will stop for the donation. And 50 years ago today, on December 12, 1975, Mary L. Cummins was named auditor of McLean County Bank. Other executive appointments are Thomas W. Cross, assistant farm manager, and Mrs. Mary Jane Golden and Mrs. Leota M. Gaffney, assistant cashiers. And 25 years ago today, on December 12, 2000, beware the black ice. The mix of rain, sleet, and snow on December 10, coupled with an overnight cold snap, likely will leave behind that bit of treachery for unsuspecting motorists. This weather is ideal for the formation of black ice. It's just extremely difficult to drive on, said an Illinois State Police Master Sergeant. Driving was treacherous the night of December 10. We're in blizzard conditions. There's zero visibility, said another state police spokesperson, who added hundreds of cars were in ditches and various towing services were called. And as always, the Pantograph's commitment to accuracy. We want you to tell us about issues regarding accuracy and fairness. Contact 309 820 3242 or ojacobs@pantograph.com. See past corrections at pantograph.com/corrections. I'll now move on to page A3 in local and state news and read a selection of articles. And the first one is Heartlands Hawks Collect Food. Students Drive brings 1,200 items for others in need on campus. And the article is written by Matus Yannick. Normal. Heartland Community College students are working to address food insecurity in central Illinois and raise awareness of resources available for their fellow students in need. The Heartland Student Government Association, SGA, launched the Hawks Food Drive this fall, and it has been encouraging community members, students and employees of the college to donate non-perishable food and personal care items to support students in need. SGA collaborated with other campus organizations, including the Student Welfare Committee, Student Leaders in Community, Student Engagement, Counseling and Wellness Services, International Student Programs, and Success Connections to support these efforts. Paired with the statewide Feed the Need food drive coordinated by the Illinois Community College Board, this effort has brought in nearly 1,200 donated food items from October 15 through December 1 to Heartland's campus. Last year, the Feed the Need initiative gathered more than 91,000 items to support food insecure students across Illinois. Access to basic resources like food is fundamental to student success, and Heartland is committed to supporting our fellow Hawks in need, said Eamon Lopiak, SGA student trustee, in a statement. Through the Hawks Food Drive, SGA is dedicated to fighting food insecurity, promoting awareness and increasing access to this essential resource. We are grateful for the unwavering support of our faculty, staff and students who continue to make this initiative a success. The Hawks Food Drive will continue year-round with donation box locations throughout campus. Heartland students experiencing food insecurity can pick up donated items in room 2400 of the Student Commons building on the Normal campus. And the next article is from News in Brief. Six Judicial Circuit Seeking Judge. And these articles are written by Tony Reid. Decatur. The retirement of Circuit Judge Jeffrey Geisler means the Sixth Judicial Circuit is in the market for a new temporary judge. Justice David K. Overstreet of the Illinois Supreme Court has launched the application process for the at-large circuit judge vacancy. Candidates who are interested and meet the legal qualifications can submit applications and a cover letter to Overstreet at P.O. Box 489, Mount Vernon 62864. Applications must be received by January 12 and applicants must be residents of the 6th Judicial Circuit at the time of their appointment. The 6th Circuit includes Champaign, DeWitt, Douglas, Macon, Moultrie and Piatt counties. Further details on information needed for applications can be requested from Overstreet or from Chief Judge Randall Rosenbaum at the Champaign County Courthouse, 101 East Main Street, Champaign, 61801. The successful candidate will serve until the judge vacancy is filled through the general election scheduled for November 7, 2028. The temporary appointment terminates December 4, 2028. And the next article is Authorities, Peoria Inmate Hanged. Peoria. Authorities have identified the 39-year-old woman found dead at Peoria County Jail this week as Pamela S. Wall of Peoria. Wall was pronounced dead in her jail cell at 5:06 a.m. Tuesday, according to Peoria County Coroner Jamie Harwood. Preliminary autopsy findings showed Wall suffered asphyxiation due to hanging, Harwood said in a news release. Toxicology testing is pending. Correctional officers discovered the unresponsive Wall in her cell around 4:25 a.m. Tuesday, according to the Peoria County Sheriff's Office. Officers immediately initiated life-saving measures and called for assistance, authorities said. Emergency responders from Advanced Medical Transport and the Limestone Fire Department arrived on scene and continued resuscitation efforts but were unsuccessful, according to a news release. Wall had been booked into the Peoria County Jail on Sunday on a failure to appear warrant. The case remains under investigation by the Peoria County Coroner's Office and the Illinois State Police. And from the page, there are three photos and the title is Bison and Bears. Hockey players deliver donated plush toys to Boys Girls Club. And the first photo is captioned, from left to right, Theo Calvis, Johnny Evans, Riku Ishida and Dryden McKay of the Bloomington Bison pose with some of the nearly 100 teddy bears they helped to deliver to the Boys and Girls Club of Bloomington Normal at 1615 Illinois Street, Bloomington, on Wednesday, December 10, 2025. The bears were collected by the Bison during Teddy Bear Toss Night on Saturday, December 6, at Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington. Fans threw more than 2,000 stuffed animals onto the ice following the first goal of the Bison's 5-1 victory over the Kalamazoo Wings. And the second photo is captioned, defenseman Theo Calvis of the Bloomington Bison sits with kids and a cuddly monkey. And the second photo is captioned, Bison players and children pose at the club. And the next article is ICE facility order extended, and it's written by Madeline Buckley from the Chicago Tribune. Chicago. The federal government has agreed to extend until April a temporary restraining order requiring improving conditions at the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement holding facility in Broadview, putting off a courtroom face-off that was scheduled for next week. In the wake of a class action lawsuit filed in October, US District Judge Robert Gettleman last month issued the temporary order requiring the federal government to provide immigration detainees enough food, water and bed space, among other remedies, finding that conditions at the ICE holding facility in Broadview do not pass constitutional muster. The complaint filed on behalf of two former detainees of the West Suburban facility accuses DHS officials of warehousing people for days on end in dirty cells that were so overcrowded that people couldn't lay down to sleep at night. The suit further alleges that government officials systematically deny detainees their right to consult with lawyers. In a court filing agreeing to the extension, the government indicated that the population at the facility has remained low since the majority of Border Patrol agents have moved on to enforcement operations in other states. Since the temporary restraining order was first issued, the parties have been working quickly to prepare for a hearing over a preliminary injunction, which, if granted, would provide longer-lasting requirements under a possible trial. That meant deposing key officials and collecting troves of video surveillance and other evidence that would have been aired at the hearing. Now, with the agreement to extend the temporary restraining order, if granted by a judge, puts off a preliminary injunction hearing or trial until April 19. The parties, though, disagreed on whether the matter should proceed straight to trial or first go to a preliminary injunction hearing, according to a joint status report filed Tuesday. Attorneys for the plaintiffs, Felipe Agustin Zamacona and Pablo Moreno Gonzalez, are arguing that the government is not producing evidence quickly enough to allow them to be ready for a trial in April. There are many disputed facts at issue in this case requiring discovery, including whether defendants have complied with the terms of their TRO, the extent of defendants' practice of coercion waivers of rights, and how and whether conditions at the facility will change once again in the spring when the defendants ramp up enforcement, the plaintiffs argued in the report. Attorneys for the government, though, counted that a trial and a hearing for a preliminary injunction would be duplicative, arguing that the case is essentially moot now that Operation Midway Blitz has ramped down. Ever since U.S. Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino and his team redeployed to other cities in mid-November 2025, Broadview has been operating as a less than 12-hour processing centre, the government said. There have been days where no one was processed at Broadview. On other days, one or two people were processed there. On rare days where 20 to 30 people were processed at Broadview, they were in and out in a matter of hours. During the height of the enforcement operation, the temporary restraining order was issued following hours of testimony from former detainees at the facility who described times in which more than 100 people were crammed into a holding cell, as well as lacking sufficient food, water and hygiene products. It has really become a prison, Gettleman said when he issued the temporary restraining order. The conditions would be found unconstitutional even in the context of prisons holding convicted felons, but these are not convicted felons. These are civil detainees. I'll now take a short break and return with part two of today's reading of selections from the Pantograph for Friday, December 12, 2025, read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.